It's a great day for a podcast. Once again, here he is, John Oakley.
Let me get Mark Entwistle in here. Mark, I appreciate you joining us on the fly here. Mark, as you know, was a former prime minister's, this is Brian Mulroney's press secretary, as well as an ambassador to Cuba and the former Soviet Union. Always appreciate you joining us. John Oakley here, Ben O'Hara Byrne on the line as well. So Mark, as the press secretary for Brian Mulroney, what are your thoughts right now, having heard the news within the last hour and a bit?
Well, thanks, John. Obviously, I personally very saddened. I must admit to be feeling kind of empty. He was a big, bigger than life kind of person who thought big and was ambitious, but at the same time cared so much about people. You know, the stories about Brian Mulroney are legendary about you know, how he would reach out to people. I remember walking with him on the streets of Montreal, and people would come up to him, and he seemed to know everybody. He knew, you know, that their mother was in the hospital, or how's their daughter doing, you know, and who's just started at school or whatever, and he knew who everybody he would call. I remember him calling, you know, caucus members all the time, constantly. He was legendary for this kind of thing, because he really did, I think, you know, care about people. And when Jean Chrétien mentioned, I did catch the clip of him saying that that in fact they you know, kind of liked each other and would talk to each other about solving things. I remember very clearly when I was Brian's press secretary, there's a tunnel that goes from an underground tunnel that goes from the Langevin building in Ottawa, which is where the office, the prime minister's sort of more public service office is. He also has an office on the hill itself in the center block, but there's a tunnel that goes underneath where you can go, you know, in the winter, etc. And I remember him and Jean Chrétien walking together, and they'd have, you know, staffers and securities hold back, and they just walk together in this tunnel, side by side, shoulders touching, you know, and engaged in conversation. They were looking for solutions to fix problems for the country, and they were obviously, you know, political opponents, and in the House of Commons they'd spar, but they were in private here trying to collaborate and find solutions for problems. I don't want to be, you know, overly pessimistic about our current state of affairs, but I'm not totally sure one would see that anymore. I hope it comes back. But it was a different time in some ways. He never stopped working. He was, you know, personally hurt oftentimes. I was with him throughout the whole Charlottetown Accord, and he put so much passion into that to try to do what he thought was best for the country in terms of constitutional unity. And he knew there were risks, and in the end, it didn't work, and it was pretty devastating for him.
Again, Mark Entwistle, 15 years, a Canadian diplomat, served in Israel and Russia, but also press secretary and director of communications to the former Prime Minister of Canada, Brian Mulroney. Mark, I mean, we live in different times now with social media and so on and so forth. But at the time, as his press secretary, and I referenced this a while back upon the news, Brian Mulroney was very attentive to the media, and he'd always come out, what are the boys saying, that kind of thing. What do you recall his relationship with the media was, and how maybe you would have to be the point person or run interference in that regard?
Well, yeah. The relationship between Brian Mulroney and the media was interesting. He would often proclaim in public that he didn't care what what they said, and he didn't read newspapers and this kind of thing, which, John, you and I know wasn't true. He was very attuned to classically what they were saying, and I would always get the phone call right after any kind of thing, sort of. So what's the buzz? What are they saying? But he had a profound respect for the media. This is the thing. You know, he would get, upset from time to time if there was coverage that he thought was inaccurate or unfair. I was often charged with going to remote journalists or the publisher of the Toronto Star at the time, John Hondrick. And, the premise would be a little exercise, but, you know, and he didn't really expect me to do that. He was sort of venting a little bit, but at the same time, he had profound respect for the role of a free media in the country. He had, he valued personal relationships with reporters. He'd phone reporters and journalists too, if he knew that they were having problems or they were sick. I mean, there's lots of cases of that. And I think the press gallery in Ottawa too, I dealt with them on a daily basis, as you know. We had kind of a mantra where we may not be able to tell journalists everything, because there are legitimately some things that are, you know, confidential and secret in government for a reason. They're not for public consumption because they're sensitive, delicate, could relate to national security and or ongoing negotiations of some kind. So you can't tell people everything. But we had a mantra, and Brian Mulroney was so supportive of this: never lie to them. So there were moments of tension. I remember, some very specific moments of tension with a particular journalist from Quebec, who had challenged Mr. Mulroney's, Quebec, credentials, shall we say. You know, this is a person who, you know, came from Baie-Comeau and, was educated at Laval University. He perceived himself and believed himself, and part of his identity was as a proud Quebecer. To be, you know, challenged on that, and there were some pretty fiery personal disagreements. But at the same time, you know, the very same journalist, sometimes, you know, he had the most warm conversations with them, and would help them if they needed a hand with family or whatever. So it was, as always with political figures, it was complicated, but he held the media in high respect.
On a lighter note, let me ask, I mean, as his press secretary and, you know, his, let's say, his way of dealing with the media or perceiving the media, you know, I'm thinking about, was it Terry Mosier and, Ben, you can hop in here and tell me, or was it maybe Andy Donato here in Toronto, the cartoons of Mulroney with his chin in a brassiere. You remember that one?
Was that Aislinn? I'm trying to remember back because over the years he had so many good ones. But yeah. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, I mean, Brian Mulroney, because he had this sort of very square jaw, right? He was almost tailor-made for the political cartoonists, and they jumped on that very quickly when it came
absolutely.
To Brian. If memory serves, you would know this better than I do. Yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, you know, like all good, you know, politicians who tend to default to language and stories that they know. So you guys have covered politics for a long time. You know that if you are around political figures, you hear the same stories, the same jokes, the same, you know, kind of stories, you know, often repeated over and over. And the press gallery guys who would travel with us, you know, and we traveled all over the world and, of course, across Canada endlessly, you know, could recite the jokes, you know, word for word. But Brian Mulroney always, he had that kind of self-deprecating humor, too, that still had them all in stitches. And he'd make fun of his own chin, right? He was leading with his chin, and so there were times when things were very serious, and other times when there was a lot of camaraderie. And I think, you know, everybody thought that we were all Canadians, and in our own, everybody in their own way was trying to do good things for the country.
He genuinely liked, Go ahead, Ben.
It was Aislinn. I looked it back up. It was Aislinn, and he had that famous one of him in like a basketball out uniform and with the brassiere carrying the two parts of his cleft chin, right? I guess politicians become immune to that stuff, sort of. Maybe not.
I mean, there's just so much of it, right? And I think, you know, all of that's fair game, and he'd even probably have a laugh. where it didn't get fair, where it was no longer fair game. And I don't know if you guys recall, there used to be a satirical magazine called Frank Magazine in Ottawa.
Indeed, yeah.
Who you remember, who would, you know, skewer politicians regularly. There's a long tradition of the UK has them, the Americans have them. There was one time in particular I do remember when they went way over the line and made comments about his daughter Caroline, and there you saw him as a father, you know, seeing red, and I've never seen him so angry as that. So, you know, there was the odd, but that was not the norm. That was not the norm. The norm, I think, was a view that you know, as long as they basically give me a fair shake, you know, I can take all the bullets.
Yeah, I recall that episode now that you brought it to mind with Caroline Mulroney. That was like the low point of that magazine, number one. But number two, how Brian Mulroney might have reacted. I think he wanted to throttle the people behind that.
Yes, yes, yes. One of my jobs was to explain that. But yeah, he was very, very upset. And it was one of the first times he was, you know, really personally hurt.
Which is understandable. Mark, let me ask you. I mean, he genuinely liked Ronald Reagan, did he not, and vice versa?
Yes. Yes. Yes, he did. And George George W. H. Bush as well. He did. He did. He liked them. He did, personally.
Did they spend any personal time away from the politics of it and, you know, the heady things that were being broached between the two countries? Did they have any personal time together?
Oh, yeah, absolutely they did. Brian Mulroney went to several times to President Bush's family compound in Maine at Kennebunkport, where just sort of, you know, personal. Now, personal, when there's prime minister and a president involved, it's not kind of like personal, like we would think, where, you know, you're kind of at the cottage, right? Mm. There's Secret Service, you know, helicopter landing pads, Air Force One, not Air Force One, Marine One, you know, the presidential helicopter that ferries people around, and, you know, snipers in trees and that kind of thing, because it's the president. But they spent, you know, time there, and very, very few foreign leaders, you know, kind of got into the personal inner sanctums of the American president like that. I was with him at Kennebunkport a couple of times. We went to Camp David, which again was relatively rare, which was a very kind of crazy place. And of course he spent time with Reagan from time to time, but I don't have a line of sight on the Reagan years as much, but certainly with President Bush Sr., that was a very close and highly respectful relationship. And I think the president, considered him in addition to the Prime Minister of Canada, a friend.
Did he ever relate to you what he felt were his greatest accomplishments or conversely disappointments?
I can do I'll do them both. I think in his mind, I believe his greatest accomplishments would be transformational politics around the Canadian economy. And here, of course, it's free trade, which was the defining piece for him as it morphed from the free trade agreement and then into the NAFTA. Although this sounds counterintuitive, name the GST as well, because it provided a degree of fiscal security to the Canadian government and made transparent the taxes that had been previously hidden as a manufacturer sales tax that nobody saw and didn't know. Of course, he was, I think, proud of his environmental record. If I'm not mistaken, even, you know, kind of veteran environmentalists like Elizabeth May have called him the greenest prime minister ever. The Acid Rain Accord, et cetera. On the foreign affairs, obviously, the struggle to dismantle, you know, apartheid. So there's a whole bunch. And his attempts on the national unity front, too. He spent inordinate amounts of time on this. It didn't work, but he felt that the country needed Quebec better to be included. And of course, you know, historians and political scientists will argue, you know, now forever about you know, the formation, how it created the Bloc, you know, the Bloc Québécois, etc. But at the time, he truly was attempting to bring Quebec into the fold and finish unfinished business. Those were great disappointments to him, though, especially Charlottetown when it failed in Newfoundland and in Manitoba. He was personally, you know, that was, I think, was a very difficult time for him.
Mark, after his life in politics, did you stay in touch?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't see him all the time and you know, we were never, you know, we're not buddies. We hang around, but, we always had an excellent relationship. And I did see him a number of times, and he was very involved in all, you know, in public life. Still, he would lend his name to, causes of all kinds. Of course, he was still involved in business for a number of years after, as you know, most sort of former prime ministers do. He worked hard to establish a center for public policy at St. Francis Xavier St. Evex University in Nova Scotia, where he also went and was a very proud alumnus, and that was a very important part of his life. He kept, you know, obviously very active, he advised the current prime minister on renegotiating the NAFTA with President Trump. So he was involved in all kinds of stuff. And, I did see him fairly often, and he was in good spirits. He started to ail, though, you know, as you guys know, he had several rounds of illness and was starting to struggle with health. So I guess it caught up to him.
As it did. Earlier this evening, passing at the age of 84, surrounded by family, he died peacefully, as we note. And I appreciate it, Mark Entwistle, as one who served with Brian Mulroney as his press secretary and director of communications. I appreciate your weighing in this afternoon or this evening, as the case has it. It's a sad note, but you've enlightened us all as you were part of the Inner Sanctum. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome, John. Take care.
Listen to the John Oakley Show live each weekday afternoon from 3 until 6. If you live in the Toronto area, just turn that AM dial to 640 and listen anywhere on Earth 24 hours a day by going to 640toronto.com. Follow on Twitter at @AM640Oakley. You've been listening to A Curious Cast. New podcasts and shows are debuting all the time. So check back often to see what's new in the Curious Cast library.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.